So welcome. Thank you guys so much for coming to my session today. I'm really excited about this topic. And just to let you guys know, I'm going to just be scratching the surface on this topic. So I'm hoping I can give you at least a little bit to think about and take back with you as you're building out content. So this is Minding the Gap, how to create a custom training program for your audience. What we're going to be really looking at today is building out content for a multi-generational audience. So we'll go ahead and just get into it. First, I want to do a quick introduction on myself. I was born and raised in Colorado, where I still live today, and I have three young children. So I have a 10-year-old, an almost 9-year-old, she'll be 9 in a couple weeks, and then a little 5.5-year-old boy. So excited, they're not very happy that I'm gone right now, but excited to get back to them in a couple days. And then I have on the right there, that is Fiona, she is my coworker. She sits with me while I work at home every day, so she typically sits right on top of my feet. I have been and started in Q&A and training in 2006, and for the past 13 years, I have been building out learning and development programs in companies. So I've built 5 learning and development programs for corporations. Typically, they would bring me in when they didn't have learning and development before, and I would build them for scratch for them. So building out a lot of universities, internal and external, for both internal and external audiences. I have worked mainly in SaaS companies as well as cybersecurity, so I've done a lot in the cyberspace, as well as medical certification and training. I also have a background in product management, so I have been a product manager for a couple SaaS companies, build out a product management org in a SaaS company as well. I don't do product management as much anymore, but I still utilize all the skills I learned as a product manager while I'm building out programs for individual companies. I find they're pretty similar. A lot of the things I did in product management really lends itself well to building out learning products. Work largely with founder-led companies. Typically, companies, when they get to a certain size, find out that, all right, we have a product, we are selling it, now we need to train people on how to use it. So that's when they typically will bring me in, mid to small to medium-sized businesses. And I want to tell you a little bit about my consulting company. So I started Rebel Learn in October of 2017. I one day told my husband I'm quitting my job. He freaked out a little bit, and I started a consulting company. And I just found that I have much more impact as a consultant. I have more reach. I'm able to work with a lot of different customers. And just more impact as a consultant than I did as a full-time employee. I found that in companies, there is a real lack of learning and development knowledge. You know, when individuals would bring me on for full-time employment, they didn't have any idea around learning and development. There was no strategy. There was no goal alignment. So that is something that I'm now working with a lot of startups and founder-led companies on so that they can do it thoughtfully. Because they would get in, and it can be pricey and expensive to build out learning and development if you don't have a true strategy around it. And with that, I have a lot of years of best practices in building out programs before, so I bring that to a lot of these companies. So let's talk about what we're talking about today. So by next year, we're going to have 5 distinct generations in the workforce, and this will be the first time in U.S. history that we have had this variety of generations in the workforce. So just think about that for a second. That is 5 distinct learning styles. That's 5 distinct groups of individuals shaped by hundreds of characteristics, and all that informs how they're going to take in the information that you guys are putting out there. 5 different levels of technology savviness, 5 different feels around collaboration, siloed learning, feelings about manuals versus videos versus classroom learning. And within these generations, there's a variety of even more factors contributing to an individual's learning style. So let's take a look at the issue, the problem that we're kind of facing here. The generations, I'm going to go through the generations that we are creating this training for, look at their characteristics, and then we'll take a look at how we can, solve for some of these issues. And again, I am really just scratching the surface here, so hopefully it gives you guys a lot to think about. And I want to just put it out there. As I'm going through these characteristics, it is really in general. So obviously, we cannot put our learners into a box. But these are some of the characteristics that define them. It also is very different by country and culture. So just keep that in mind if you are building out global content. So the problem, be honest, think about your guys' own content. Do you think that you guys are ready for five generations in your workforce? Do you have enough variety? Do you know who those people are? The problem is with these five generations working side by side, we have to make sure that we are providing the variety of training that is needed to engage all of them. Each of these generations is shaped by very different characteristics. And most of the content that companies currently have probably isn't going to do the job for about 50% of that audience. So it's really taking a look at your content today and figuring out, is it going to be enough? The other big thing is the learning and development industry and technology, as you guys know, is constantly changing. It's constantly shifting to keep up with these trends. So we as learning professionals also need to change and shift with these times. If we become stagnant as learning and development professionals, then our content becomes stagnant, and that is definitely not going to speak to the generational differences. So I'm going to go through the different generations, kind of the players that we have that are going to be coming into the workforce. So we have traditionalists. I'm going to start on the left-hand side, or on your guys' right. Traditionalists born before 1946. We have baby boomers that were born between 1946 and 1964, and these years can kind of shift depending on who you talk to. Gen X, who is 1965 to the early 80s. Millennials, or Generation Y, who is early 80s to mid to late 90s. And then Gen Z, that is born after 1997. And I want to note that in the Generation X, at the end of that generation, there is a micro generation there, about 5 years. And they do share very similar characteristics, so I'm not going to go deep into that. That's actually my generation. So we will go ahead and take a look through this. So let's take a deeper look at each one of these generations. So let's start with traditionalists, born 1922-ish to 1945. This is generations also called the silent generation. They are characterized by being very hardworking, very determined, loyal employees. They respect authority. They waste not, so they don't appreciate when you give them information that is wasteful or that doesn't mean anything to them. I put an asterisk next to tech challenge because, again, you can't put people in a box. But they tend to be less comfortable with technology because it has been in their life for a little bit, you know, less time. They are very traditional in the way that they like to learn, and they have a high work ethic, and they're very reliable. So these individuals seen in the workforce, these are a lot of retirement postponed individuals. So there are some industries that will probably be higher in the traditionalist side. You might have more individuals as in the traditional generation in certain industries. So in the medical industry, there are a lot of people that stay doctors for a much longer time. Real estate, that tends to be the same case. This generation also have a lot of retirees coming back to train. So they've retired, but then they're being asked to come back into the workforce to help train these new generations coming in. So they are very good mentors. They have traditionally become really great mentors to the younger generations, especially the millennial generation. So this millennial generation, who we're going to go pretty deep into, really values feedback and mentorship, so this tends to be a really nice pairing. If you have a learner base that is high in traditionalists and you find that there is some adversity to technology, you just want to make sure that your content for them is easily accessible and has a really great user experience, especially if it's your main form of learning, if you are mainly online. Also with them, if you have a really large amount of individuals that are in this generation, you want to make sure that your content is to the point, that it follows traditional norms and is respectful and more formal in your tone. Manuals that can be printed and interacted with are really something that they love as a resource. And also traditional classroom training. So they would rather be in a classroom learning than taking content online. So they want to be there and interact with the instructor themselves. They are very low on interaction or group work, but still love that classroom feel and that more traditional type of learning. So next, let's look at the baby boomers, characterized by strong work ethic, independent and self-assured, very competitive, goal-centric, resourceful, focused, and team-oriented. So this group is very goal-centric. Making sure that you have very strong learning objectives is important. And depending on the type of content you're creating, building in a goals section would help motivate this generation. Providing content that is relevant to their role and can be applied on the job is also very important. They are independent in work, but like to be a part of a team. So that, coupled with their competitive drive, make a team-structured gamification strategy very successful for this group. So this allows them to be on a team and contributing to the greater good while still being able to contribute independently. They're also very resourceful and focused, so providing extra learning resources like this, like links, videos, books, blogs, et cetera, that they can do outside of training is something that provides them a lot of value and that they will interact with. So let's look at Gen X. This, again, is my generation, and I will say I am completely 100% a Gen X person. Individualistic, flexible, work-life balance is extremely important to this generation. Technically adept, somewhat skeptical, motivation, and pragmatic. So for Gen X, working independently, somewhat averse to group work. So for me, whenever I'm in a group, and especially in onboarding groups, and I'm asked to be put into a group and start working, it terrifies me. It's not something I am very comfortable with at all. And this could be due to the fact that when this generation was going to school, if you think about it, you're sitting in rows, one behind the other, told to work on your own, don't talk to the person next to you. This is how this generation and a lot of the baby boomer generation, they were taught in school. It's how we learned how to learn. And so it's where we're comfortable learning still as adults today. They prefer self-directed learning with lots of activities and hands-on time. This generation loves hands-on learning, which is pretty global. They like immediate feedback. They don't like to waste time. Are they doing it right? Are they getting the information? And if not, tell me what I'm doing wrong so I can start to do it right from the beginning. Providing knowledge checks or checks on learning through the trainings is a good idea. So if you have an e-learning that you're putting together, having knowledge checks along the way or even in the videos themselves is a good way to give that immediate feedback. If you are in classroom trainings, it's just asking questions along the way versus waiting to the very end to see if they're getting it. Similar to baby boomers, provide the ability to contribute to the greater good of the team in an individual way through gamification. So again, gamification is going to be a consistent theme throughout this presentation because it is something that is a good way to just motivate your learners and kind of make it fun. So let's talk about Gen Y. So Gen Y is the fastest growing generation in the workplace. By 2020, they are going to make up almost half of the workforce. So it is very important that we really understand what makes this group tick, how they're going to learn, how they're going to ingest information in, and it's just only going to grow. Your workforce is only going to grow with this generation. This generation is characterized by being very tech savvy, family-centric, again, very work-life balance-oriented, just like Generation X, achievement-oriented, team-oriented. They crave feedback and guidance, like we kind of talked about. They love the mentorship side of things. Hands-on and interactive, and then meaningful work. They like to know what they're doing is meaningful and what they're learning is meaningful, that they're going to be able to apply it. So for tech savvy, content must be in a form that meets Gen Y where they're comfortable, on their devices, on your phone. So you have to have responsive content. You have to have a good experience with your content that they can interact with wherever they are. The user experience is just as important as the content itself. Mentoring and feedback. So make time in classrooms as well as online content to provide them feedback. Also setting up mentoring programs like we talked about before with a more mature generation is a great way to feed both of those learning styles. Collaboration and interaction. So take into account when in a group setting. This group really loves to collaborate. They like to get together. They like to brainstorm. They like to talk through things. And again, if you think about the way that this generation and the next generation, Gen Z, has learned in school, they're in pods facing each other, constantly talking and interacting with each other. So again, it is how they've learned how to learn. So we have to take that into account when we have a large group of these individuals that might be in our classrooms or even online. So if they're online, you would want to do some social learning, put together cohorts or social learning, something that they can still interact with individuals, even though you have an online platform. They're also very achievement-oriented, so again, gamification is going to be a good way to motivate. And then meaningful work. So we'll discuss more in a few slides, but making sure that the content has meaning to their day-to-day and is important for their adoption. On-the-job training is very, very important here. And then lastly, we have Gen Z. So this is our youngest generation. These are the generation that is now just coming into the workforce. So they are technology, technology, technology. They have not known life without technology. They prefer online communication versus face-to-face. They're very visual learners, very independent. They do have a short attention span. They can take in a lot of information, and they like to take it in at very short amounts. It's what they're used to. It's how they've taken in information their whole life. And they're multitaskers. So they are highly technical. Like I said, they don't know life without mobile phones, social media. And this very much shapes the way that they learn and take in information. They prefer online communication. They like to be on their phone instead of being in a classroom. They are very visual, very independent. They ingest content really rapidly, so micro-content and micro-learnings for this group is very important. They will not interact with, potentially won't interact with content for longer than just a couple minutes. So you want to make sure that if you are putting together a learning program and you have videos, they are in micro-learnings, very, very short and to the point. And make sure that it can be accessed very nicely on a phone. And light on having to collaborate with teams, they're very similar to Gen X in the fact that, you know, they like to be independent, kind of do self-paced, work through it themselves, ask questions when they need to. Okay, so I'm going to take a pause. I just threw a lot of information at you. So I wanted to do a quick working session. And this might terrify some of you if you are in my generation or any of the generations that don't like this. But I want you guys to get into groups so you can turn to the person next to you, or if you do prefer to work on your own, please do that, and you guys can just think through it. But I want to go through for about 5 minutes or so, and I want you to think through a couple questions about your content and your guys' companies and what you're doing. So I want you to work through your audience. Do you know who they are? Do you know what generations your organization is made up of? Who are you developing content for, whether it be technical writing, learning, whatever it might be? Are you heavy on one generation over another? And if you don't know this, then maybe just make note that you don't know this and something that you're going to have to go ahead and figure out. Why are you doing well? What are you doing well with your content as it pertains to the audience? So what are you doing well right now? And what potential challenges do you think could pop up with your content or going forward? So I'm going to give you about 5 minutes, and I will say I will probably ask for a couple volunteers to raise your hand and share, if that's okay. So go ahead, and I'll let you know when about 5 minutes hits. Okay, raise your hand if you guys want a couple more minutes to talk through it. Are you guys all ready? Do you need a couple more minutes? Okay. Thumbs up? Okay, cool. All right, who wants to share? Yeah? Okay. Right. And we talked yesterday about the augmented reality and the what you guys are interacting with. And that potentially could be a really good option.
Right. We're looking at getting some of our service manual information through augmented reality where they could take their phone to the device and go, okay, this pops
Great. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for sharing also. Anybody else? One more person. What did you guys talk about? Thank you. Everyone?
Awesome. So we analyze all of your data in a not creepy way. So the coupons for when you buy the most. So in the grocery space, we have a lot of very traditional learners, people who have been bagging groceries as a kid and worked their way up the Kroger corporate ladder. So they really enjoy like a hands-on classroom training. And our current offering right now is a very intensive 2-day. You fly to our office. We do case studies and workshops for 2 full days in the classroom. The issue we're finding is that as we are rolling out new enhancements, it's just not sustainable for people to fly in from all over the country for a 2-day training. So my coworker and I are here.
Yes, that is so exciting. Awesome, that's great. So it's you're looking at taking the content that is conceptual and putting it potentially online and then maybe still having some application where they can do that in person.
Yep, so we'll still offer some classroom for the older participants, but then also mimic that in a webinar for people who can't physically fly and then have the same content served up via walkthrough within the product
itself. Cool. Awesome. Thank you so much. Anybody else dying to share for me? Oh, perfect.
I'm just curious.
Yes.
So in my world with our documentation that is going to be used also for train content, we need to cover all the spans. So we need the quick and dirty steps, but we also need contextual information to make it relevant. We also need some visual aids like a screenshot or a short video. And right now my struggle is determining how to best combine or separate those to maximize their efficiency, not overwhelm whoever doesn't care about the other part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if combining, how to prioritize. So which one wins, prime real estate at the top of the page.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's what your challenge is right now. Are you using Flare?
Yeah.
To serve up the content?
Yeah.
Okay. You should see me after.
Cool.
We'll talk through some things. Okay, cool. Thank you so much. I hope that was helpful and you guys can start thinking about some of your challenges that you're going to be looking at. So let's take a look at the solution. And I have a couple of things I wanted to talk through here. So here are some things keep in mind as you are building out these learning programs, taking into account now the characteristics you know about these generations. So the first one, and this is obvious, it's obvious and you guys already know this, but know your audience. That is the number one thing. Your audience is comprised of unique individuals from all walks of life. Baby boomers and millennials alike expect the same benefits from your online training courses. Each of these generations, obviously, is going to have very different characteristics of how they learn. You guys need to know who they are. Who is in your company? Who are you building content for? If you don't, then you're going to be building content for your stakeholder and yourself, and then you're going to miss the mark. So you have to know your audience. It is so important to understand what makes them tick, what their technology level is, what types of interactions do they want, what types of use cases are meaningful to them. So these are things that you have to really get your hands around, and I think that this is something that a lot of times is easy to not do because we can build content for ourselves and put it out there, and it's done, and we have content. But if we really want to make an impact on our learners and we really want them to be getting something out of it and retaining that information, knowing your audience is huge. I'll give a quick example. I have a cybersecurity client, and I went in to start consulting for them. And they had this entire curriculum, an entire program that they had been doing for a while, but for some reason their enrollment was going down. So I went in and I said, well, show me your surveys, show me all of the evaluation you've done on everything, and they had nothing. They didn't understand their audience. They didn't know what made them tick. They didn't know what they were doing right, and they didn't know what they were doing wrong. So I went in and I interviewed every single student that came out of that program, and I presented it to them, and it kind of blew their minds. They were like, wow, we had no idea. So you kind of just have to do it. It's easy not to do it, but if you do want to make the impact, you have to know your audience. And I'm going to be going back to know your audience quite a lot over this span of time here. All right. The next one is, and don't be mad at me, content is not the only king. You have always heard the saying content is king. Obviously, as writers, this is huge for us. And that still holds true. If you don't have the right content, the right objectives, the right tone, the right use cases, you've missed the mark before you've even started. But content is no longer enough. You have to deliver up the content in a way that people are going to interact with it. Gone are the days of putting a 500-page manual of rich content on a new employee's desk and calling it onboarding. So we have to meet our learners, again, where they learn. And generational characteristics will play a part in determining how this content is served up. So that manual might work for a lot of individuals. If you have generations made up of individuals that we want a manual, that still might work for you. But if you look at your audience and you see that they are made up of a different generations that like to learn online, then the manual is not going to be enough anymore. So really looking at your audience again. This next one is my very, very favorite. Letting go of your personal biases. So be aware of what your personal biases are. Homer and I had a conversation about this the other night. So we have to remember that we are humans that are part of our own generation. We can't let those bleed into how we see learning and how we build content for our audience. We have to be open to creating new things, push our own comfort level, study our own audience, and do what speaks and works for them, not us. So you can't put any of these learners in a box, and you can't bring in your own personal bias of what you think of anybody in these different generations. You just have to understand them and build the content for them in the way that they need to learn. I'm going to give you an example. I'm sorry, yes?
Oh, I just wanted to make a comment.
Yeah.
Content is king. I think the key is to redefine what content really is.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that I push really hard at my company, because they think of content as documentation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Content is how we deliver knowledge, and that's our job, is to deliver knowledge. So however that takes that form, that's what content is.
Yep, agreed 100%. That's great. Thank you. So for the biases piece, I have a story. Again, worked with a learning and development professional who, she just hated gamification. She didn't understand it. She didn't want to use it. She didn't understand why we had to put together little games for our employees to learn. And she missed the mark because we had an employee base that was high in individuals that were highly motivated by gamification. We had a younger generation that was working mainly in our company. So we missed the mark from the very beginning because she just didn't understand it. She's like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to put it together. So she let her personal bias of how she felt about it, get in the way of being able to put together a really good learning program. So as soon as you start to do that, you can lose your learners, and it's very hard to get them back. It's very hard to get your learners back after you've kind of lost that piece of them. So I want you guys, just a quick raise of hands with your personal biases. I'm not going to ask, so don't worry. You don't have to share what your biases are. But how many of you guys know of at least one personal bias you might have when you're creating content? Good. Perfect. So keep thinking about that. Keep making sure that you are asking yourself over and over, that you are self-aware of what your biases are, and don't let them come into what you're doing. Because again, at the end of the day, you're not creating this content for yourself. You're creating it for other people, and you need to be speaking to those individuals. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think just talking about it with them. I mean, I kind of called Homer out the other night on a bias. I think it's, and I wouldn't do it that. Sorry, Homer. Thanks for coming to my session. No, I think having a conversation, I think if you, here's the thing, is any conversation you have with someone, if you can keep the emotion out of it and say, look, you know, is that how you feel or is that how your audience feels? And if it is, that is how I feel, or, oh, I don't even know, actually. I think it's just making them think about it. It's like, and I think you can have that conversation where don't let your own bias get in the way. So it's just, you know, take the emotion out of it and be very factual and data-driven with them on that piece. So it can be hard because sometimes individuals will feel the emotion back, but do you have someone in mind?
Ooh, is that Homer?
Yes.
I just wanted to make a comment about that.
Yeah.
Bias piece. I recently attended a training on domestic violence. I work in the social services. Domestic violence is a big issue in my particular world.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hearing all this stuff prior to going to the training. So I had a personal bias. I was like, oh, I don't even have time to go to this training. I don't want, whatever. So I went to the training, and it was so well done. And I didn't know the term gamification at the time, but the way they did the interactive learning was so effective. I left that training going, you don't know nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and realizing that throwing out your personal bias is really important.
Yeah, it is. It's uncomfortable. It can be really uncomfortable to let go of your bias because everybody has them. I mean, I have personal bias that I have to get rid of all the time. And it can be really uncomfortable, but it is extremely important. And it just starts with being self-aware, understanding what those are and what pieces. Like, where do you really need to maybe make a little extra effort to get rid of that? Thank you for sharing that. Okay, so for the next one, the relevancy or WIFM, so the what's in it for me. These ones, again, these are global. This pertains to everybody. But what's in it for them? Why does your content matter to them? Why should they take your training, read your manual, watch your video? What is the intrinsic motivation that you're giving to this individual? When creating content for varied audience, it's important that you distill the message down to the true value prop for that audience. This will give them motivation to take the training. This will allow them to engage higher with this training. This will then increase retention, which is really the goal, right? It's to increase the retention rate that these individuals are going to be taking away. With the WIFM is story-based content. So I don't know if anybody creates their training as stories, but this is something that I really like to do. This goes along with the WIFM, but creating story-based content speaks to your audience which helps better engage them. Weaving in a story to your training allows a context to be laid without even giving in the context. So if you, you know, weave in a story with characters and scenarios and, you know, a fake Acme technology solutions, and you put the story in, you've already laid an entire groundwork of context that they get right away because it is exactly what they live every day. And then that scenario-based learning can help them retain that information much easier. So I have built out programs where we have stories and we've weaved stories through from the beginning content all the way through to the advanced content. And it's always the same and the context is always there for them. So it gets them there quicker. It also allows them to easily apply it to their day-to-day. They can see themselves in the story so they understand how they're going to use it. So story-based content is really, it's fun to create too. It's kind of fun to do those stories and get through it. So the content needs to be engaging and right-sized. It's important to make sure that your content you're creating is in the format that is engaging to your audience. Again, knowing your audience will inform what this format is. Going back to the first bullet, knowing your audience is important, knowing the characteristics. It seems silly to say, but if your learners are engaged with your content, they're going to be more likely to ingest it. They're going to learn from it, and it's going to significantly raise the retention rate. It also needs to be right-sized for your audience. So if you recall, some generations will not interact with content for longer than maybe 3 to 5 minutes. Other generations will sit down and go through hours of training and be fine with a full day of training in classroom. So it just needs to be right size, and it's understanding what that right size is for your audience. Accessibility. This is a big one. Your content, regardless of format or modality, has to be easily accessible, plain and simple. This is a big one. I can't tell you how many times I have gone into companies and they have all this content and they don't understand why nobody's interacting with it. And it's like, do they know where to find it? Can they access it? Nope, it's pretty disparate. It's in a learning management system over here. It's in an HRIS system over here. It's on SharePoint over here. Doug has it on his laptop over there. So it's all over the place. And it doesn't mean that the content isn't good. It doesn't mean that it isn't maybe even in the right format, but they can't access it. So making sure that you have a good strategy for that accessibility piece is paramount to the success of your training program. My brain just went in a weird place. So as far as building out this content, if you have more non-technical audience, if some of the more technical audience is unable to easily access the content, then they're going to become fatigued by a poor learner experience. So this is something that I have actually gone through before in my past is I'll go into a company and try and find stuff, and that learner experience in general, I get over it pretty quickly, and then again, I've been lost. I don't ever really go back to try and find learning. I will, try and find learning in a different way by just asking my manager or emailing IT directly. So I never really go back and ever think that there's going to be a really good learner experience there. So making sure that that is really accessible. And for technically savvy generations, you have to think about the fact that you are competing with a number of apps and programs that they are looking at all day, every day, not even learning content necessarily, but anything that they interact with. They're going on Netflix, they're, whatever they're doing, and the user experience is phenomenal. And you are going to be competing with that if you have an online learning program. So you need to make sure that your user experience, if you are going to be having a lot of online learning, is something that is really, really good. That one is important because, again, if they get on and they're like, oh, this kind of sucks and I don't like looking at it, they're not going to come back to it. So that accessibility piece is huge. And the last one, variety and balance. Again, we've talked a lot about this, but this really speaks to the generational differences. It's important to make sure that you have a variety of content in different formats, sizes, and modalities. So you're speaking to all of your learners. And I was just talking to Homer and Patrick about, they are such a globally dispersed company that it's really hard to just pinpoint who your audience truly is because it's kind of everybody. I mean, anybody can interact with it. So I think at that point it is making sure that you just have a variety and you have a balance of content that individuals can interact with. But yeah, that is it. Let me see what time it is. So we have about 15 minutes. What questions do you guys have for me? You guys have asked some really great questions along the way, too. Yeah?
Do you have any strategies or suggestions for convincing higher-up management that having some of the variety or having, supporting your different audiences is actually valuable or worth investment in time?
Yes. So this is something that, as a learning development professional, I've had to do in every company I've gone into. And it is a lot of just education. And it takes a little bit of time. So I have typically just gone in and done a lot of meetings with C-level and whoever the decision makers are and done a lot of education on, and it's really pulling data. So I think it's gathering kind of what you're seeing and making sure it's data-driven versus emotionally driven or, hey, I heard. So making sure that it's really data driven. And then I think the other big thing is if you are having things like attrition because people are not learning, they aren't going through a good onboarding program, they are not becoming successful within that first 3 months, if you don't onboard somebody really well, they are more likely to attrit in the first year. So if you are having a high attrition rate and you can and you have good data on why, then you can always put it back onto the ROI of things. Is, look, it is costing us a lot of money not to be providing this content and this training in a really good format. So this is where we're at right now. This is how much, you know, we're losing or how many people are leaving or whatever it might be. And then you kind of circle it back. Because, yes, it's going to cost money, a little bit of money now or more time, but look at where we're going to be in a year. So I think it's you have to stay really data-driven, though, and you have to kind of just do it a little bit over time. The other big thing is that education piece. Remember that the individuals that are making those decisions typically don't have a lot of learning and development background, maybe have never worked with learning and development before, or don't really know what you do on a day-to-day basis. So I think the other big thing is showing them. Like, look at all the stuff we're doing. They might not know that, you know, some of the stuff you're creating or some of the content you're putting together. That was always the thing that was shocking to me, is I would go in and say, look at everything my team is doing right now. And a lot of times they were like, wow, I had no idea. So I think it's just bringing some of that to them and continually educating. I would just book meetings with them all the time, to be honest with you. The other big thing I would do is find champions in the company that really did see the value, really liked it, knew that we needed it, and knew that we needed it in different formats. And I kind of would bring them along and have them be my champions. Typically, somebody that is more of a decision maker, and they're in your company, they're somewhere. So I think kind of partnering with other people as well. Did that help?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you have any favorite tips or methods or best practices for how you implement gamification?
So with gamification, starting small. With learning and development, I think a lot of it is just starting small. So if you have a platform that you like to use, I don't know if you have, I know you're learning, or you're using Flare to provide training. Do you have an LMS as well?
We do.
Okay. And does it have gamification built into it? Do you know?
I don't believe so.
Okay. If you have a platform that has gamification built into it, it's easy to kind of like turn it on and make it small. So you start out with like, maybe individuals get points for making comments on a course, or if you have like a social learning platform, like they get points. So I think starting small is good and kind of building on top of that. The big thing with me that I don't like to just like throw everything out there at once and overwhelm, because it will overwhelm and people, again, will become fatigued by that experience. So I think the biggest thing is starting small. And starting with things that people know. So if you think about it, when you go to Starbucks, if you use their app, you get points every time you buy something. And then you get free stuff. And that is my experience every day. You get points for that. You get points on Yelp. So I think starting with something that people already understand and already motivates people instead of reinventing the wheel is something good to start with as well. And then again, it depends on your audience, but maybe having cohorts or like teams that you can kind of like, you know, put together and compete against each other. Again, it also depends on the content. Some teams, like a sales team, if you have sales training, they're very motivated by like leaderboards and, you know, who's beating who. So it kind of just depends on your audience as well. But yeah, start small. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your suggestions or recommendations for evaluating the effectiveness of a training program. So are you more of a, because I find sometimes, you know, tests are a necessary evil in some mm-hmm. cases. And sometimes it's really just hands-on. I know that there's no cookie cutter, one size fits all kind of thing, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on
for evaluation?
That. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the big things that I like to do, and I don't know if you use Addy when you're
yep.
building out content. So I like to use Addy, but in a little bit of a different way. I like to build an evaluation from the very beginning. So for anybody that doesn't know what Addy is, it's a instructional design methodology. You use it in order to be able to make sure that you are developing the right content for your group. And it's analyze, design, develop, implement, evaluate. So I like to bring an evaluation, typically right at design and making sure that I am hitting stuff. But then the evaluation piece at the end can be difficult when you are surveying people. So it's like doing surveys. Assessments, if you're going to use assessments as an evaluation tool, you kind of have to have a baseline. So like for SecureSet, one of my clients, we evaluate them at the beginning, and we give them a test at the beginning before they even start the program, and then we evaluate them with the same type of, the same test at the end, and you can easily see that learning took place. So that's a really good way to do it if you, if your content and your curriculum lends to that. The on-the-job stuff is important, so I think it's keeping a close touch with managers and finding out, you know, are they performing? Are they doing their job correctly? That kind of stuff. But I think it just depends on your content and kind of what your curriculum looks like on what you need to do with that. What kind of content do you create? Or like what's the... Okay.
Last life, I was an instructional designer.
Oh, cool.
And I'm just kind of working towards combining those in future life.
I like that.
So I just wanted to pick your brain, that's all.
Cool. Make sure you get my card, and we can talk later.
I got so excited when you mentioned Addie. I'm like, yes.
Any other questions? Yeah.
About identifying who your users are.
Mm. Yeah, so it's a little different depending on if you're having an internal or an external audience, right? So internal, yes, you can work with HR, and a lot of times they can give you a look at the demographics on who it is that you're training and who the company is made up of. Personas, 100%. That is something that I learned from product management that I always bring into every training, is putting together personas, making sure that you have, and you can even name them. You can make it really fun. And you know that you're creating for the persona, you know, Janet or whatever it might be. So I think that the personas is huge, understanding that that individuals. The other big thing that I like to do is do customer journey mapping. So we can talk through that more if you want. But it is basically looking at your customer or your client or whoever your audience is and how they start to finish interact with your content and what that journey looks like. And then you kind of, you know, you define what all that is, and then you basically create based on that. So it is, you use personas when you do that, but it's a really fun thing to do. It takes a lot of time, but once you have it done, it's done. And you can use it for marketing, you can use it for sales, you can use it for developing content, you can use it for website design, all of that. So I can talk you through that if you want. I have actually templates how to do that. But if it is an external audience, that is more difficult. If they're interacting with like a piece of software that you have or they're signing up for something, you can always try and gather some demographics information there by just asking questions like, you know, male, female, age group, that kind of stuff. But that one is hard. The external audience is a little bit harder to get exactly who they are if you have such a globally dispersed audience as you guys do. All right, we have 4 minutes. Any other questions? If not, and you come up with any later, please let me know.
Sasha, I have a question.
Yeah.
It's more in relation to what you said. I once attended the training, and maybe this is what you meant with the personas. I once attended the training, it was like a video. And at the very beginning, we were asked to choose or prefer the instructor. So there was the old guy comforting.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Yeah. That's really cool. I love that idea. I'm going to have to steal that.
I imagine it would be pretty expensive. You would charge a lot for that.
Who?
You.
Oh, as a consultant? I don't know. It depends on what you're watching. What's expensive? No. it just depends on what it is. As a consultant, I charge based on project or hourly or whatever works for the company. So, yeah. Cool. Thanks so much, you guys. And if anybody